You ready?
It's time to start.
This should be played at high volume.
That's cool.
You know what this is.
What is this?
Me, don't you remember?
Totally amazing.
I think you've got something there.
Quite understandable.
It's on the air.
Something's definitely going on here.
Take my word for it.
Now.
Come on. It's showtime.
Make it so.
Ready, go.
All right. If you're ready, time to rock and roll. Welcome into More Than a Podcast. Now, this was not my original program for today. I'm going to put that off till next week. I had a call on Audible on this one because I came across something on the news just a little while ago that I just could not let go. I could not let it go by because it was, you'll see what I mean in a minute. Today's podcast is going to be drawing a line of distinction between the protesters of my era, the 1960s, and the protesters of today, which are quite a bit different. And how I came upon this subject the other night, just sitting at the dining room table, just paying some bills with the TV on in the background, and I heard this 911 call. Now, there was a pro-Hamas demonstration at Vanderbilt University, $60,000 a year, by the way, which means if you go there for 4 years, you're into it for $250,000, Mom and Dad. Anyway, Vanderbilt University is having these rough and tough kids. They're out there. Oh boy, we're gonna show them, man. We're tough. We're gonna protest against the university. We're gonna show them who's boss. We're just gonna have to call 911.
Yeah, there is currently a female student who is being denied the right to change her tampon that has been in for multiple hours, which leads to an increased risk of toxic shock syndrome. So while you're saying...
I'm a female, I understand.
Right, so then you should understand...
Get her assistance.
Okay, what you're not hearing is that if she stands up to use the restroom to change her tampon, they are threatening arrest, so it is not an option for her.
Ma'am? You have an emergency.
Yes, ma'am, I do.
That is an emergency.
Do you have an emergency? Not your friend that's inside. Do you have an emergency?
That is my emergency.
I don't remember the time that I needed to have an emergency personally to call 911 for help.
I'm sorry, what?
I don't remember a time when it has to be a personal emergency for me to call 911 for help. I am requesting assistance, medical urgent assistance.
Ooh, man. You know, I've always thought 911 is for an emergency, a car accident, a criminal activity, a heart attack, a stroke, something like that. That's why we have 911. But this little lady could not understand. Her concept of 911 is probably different than mine and yours.
I don't remember the time that I needed to have an emergency personally to call 911 for help.
I have no... follow-up on that. I don't know how that ended up. And even if I did, I don't know if I'd want to share it with you. But anyway, that's some of the people out there at Vanderbilt University. We'll have more from them at the end of the podcast. So don't touch your dial because it gets even a little better at the end. These people that are protesting today have no freaking idea what protesting used to be like back in the 1960s. Now, if you want to protest in the 60s, there was a chance you were going to get roughed up by the police. There was a chance you might get smacked around with a billy club or thrown to the ground. You might be enveloped in tear gas. And you might have been arrested. And it wasn't like you went to a cafeteria for half an hour, then they said, bye-bye, don't do it again. When you got arrested back then, you got arrested. You could spend a little time in the slammer with Bubba, which was, it never happened to me, but it did happen. And a lot of times you had to come up with real bail money. And a lot of these kids in the 60s, they didn't have 50 bucks on them or 20 bucks or sometimes not even 10 bucks. So back in the 60s, if you got arrested, you were probably going to spend a little time in a detention center. One of the most notable protests of the 1960s was in Selma, Alabama, at the Edmund Pettus Bridge. Civil rights leaders marching over the bridge. They were planning to take a list of demands to Governor Wallace, who was the governor of Alabama at the time. Listen to this audio, taking you back in time to the Edmund Pettus Bridge. It's a whole lot different than calling 911 to get your tampon changed.
500 protesters with activist John Lewis in the lead set out for the Capitol. But just across the bridge, Sheriff Clark is waiting with an army of deputies.
Once you get to the apex of the bridge, ain't no turning back. You got to go now. You got to move. So you can't walk down there scared. And so we kept on walking. And we got down to the bottom of the bridge.
When they told us to stop, you could see the horses. You could see them. They were ready. Their shoes was shiny and everything. Nobody expected Sunday to be bloody because the cameras was there, the whole world was watching.
We thought they were going to be arrested, but instead, Sheriff Clark rode through the crowd on horseback, beating people.
John Lewis and them said, let's get on our knees and pray. And as we was praying, that's when you heard them gas caps open up. And when you heard them open up and you opened your eyes, went up with that white gas all around you. Then they said, y'all got to get out of here. A couple of people was hurt. Some people went directly to the hospital.
Selma organizer Amelia Boynton is among those brutally beaten on the bridge, knocked unconscious by a billy club.
We thought she was dead. Reason we thought she was dead because they put her on a hearse and take her to the hospital.
CBS interrupted the showing of Judgment at Nuremberg on that Sunday night to show those peaceful protesters being beaten on that bridge. It woke up many parts of America that had turned away from fully understanding what the fight for equal rights was really all about.
Could you imagine walking across that bridge, getting closer and closer to the end, and all you see is a sea of police officers on horseback with dogs and water cannons, and you know they've got tear gas? You had no idea what was about to happen in the next couple minutes. But they went and they protested. Those people changed the country. After that demonstration, things were never quite the same. The civil rights movement had found its mojo and it went to the next gear. We had other protests during the 60s. Another one well known was at the Chicago Convention, the Democratic Convention in 1968, which was an absolute circus. Here's a little audio from what happened on an August night in Chicago.
Then the police moved, with a truck carrying huge spotlights leading the way across the darkened park, firing tear gas from another truck and from gas guns up the slope toward the outer limit of the park, and the yippies fled before them as they had the two previous nights, unable to stand before the heavy barrage of gas.
Use your rifles. Beginning to taste the tear gas now. At least some of it is wrecking over this rifle.
So far as you know, the police did not respond with undue violence down there.
The audio there really doesn't do it justice. You really have to see some video of that because it was absolutely bedlam. They were throwing kids around, young protesters, like they were rag dolls, beating them on the head with billy clubs, throw them in the back of the paddy wagons. It was what was considered to be at the time a police riot. It was not good, and especially wasn't good for the Democrats who were having their convention just a few miles away. That was pretty much considered to be a turning point in the election of 1968, ensuring Richard Nixon the presidency. People had just seen that convention and what happened, the bedlam. They were kind of fed up with the Democrats. Nixon was running on a law and order program with an end the war in Vietnam slogan and pretty much just slid him into the presidency. And what happened after that is the subject for another podcast at another time. We progress through the protests of the 1960s, and there is none more infamous or deadly than what happened at Kent State, as you hear in this audio.
The tear gas first started down the commons, then the guard moved up on both sides of Taylor Hall and forced the kids off the commons. Then one group, I don't know how many there were, 50 maybe, perhaps more, perhaps less, moved down to the practice football field. And then there were a whole lot of kids around them, A few kids were throwing sticks and stones, but that was only a handful, not more than 10, 15. And then the guard shot some tear gas up on the hill to disperse the crowd, and the kids picked it up and threw it back.
This area immediately. Leave this area immediately.
And all of a sudden I heard the shooting. And then I saw people dropping to the ground, and then I fell to the ground also, because I couldn't walk anymore. And
what the investigators have to determine then is whether indeed there was a sniper, and whether the guard was justified in firing its weapons, or whether, as some people here believe, the guard, under the pressure of a rock-throwing attack, panicked and fired its weapons indiscriminately, killing four people. Ike Pappas, CBS News, at Kent, Ohio.
There you have just a very small snapshot of what protests were like in the 1960s. People were really committed, I mean really committed, to their cause, whether it was civil rights or ending the war in Vietnam. And when you protested then, you had to be ready for the consequences. You had to have a little skin in the game. You weren't going out there with your iPhone to Facebook something, or get something on Instagram or Snapchat or Twitter or any of this stuff. You were pretty much out there by yourself. Maybe your friends were with you. But you believed there was a cause which was larger than you. Perhaps you had friends that were killed in Vietnam or went to Vietnam and gave you firsthand accounts, or maybe you were a witness to the civil rights era and all the shortcomings that went on during those times. So we go back to where we started this podcast, at Vanderbilt University, and the protesters there protesting against Israel. How committed are they? I'm not sure. There's no way for me to say. But sometimes I feel it's all about Facebook or shooting a video or getting on Snapchat or Twitter or Instagram or whatever. It's, hey, look at me. I'm a protester. In our day, there were no cell phones. You went out to protest, and you might be the only person who knew you were there. But there were a group of people there, and I say a large group, thousands of people, who did bring an advancement to the civil rights movement and did end a war in Vietnam. What the protesters are doing today, I'm not quite sure. That protest at Vanderbilt University did end up with a couple of arrests. And next day, the protesters were out protesting the fact that they got arrested. One young man who kind of looks like the Pillsbury Doughboy with a bad toupee, was really irritated that he got arrested. And he was out there to stick it to the man.
Again, as people have said, for 21 hours, we were deprived of medical attention. We were deprived of sleep. We were deprived of food, water, resources. It's disgusting that this is how they treat student protesters on this campus.
Shame! Shame!
In jail, I experienced better conditions than at Vanderbilt University. I had access to water. I had access to a bathroom. I had access to my friends and the ability to rest. How dare this university deprive us of basic humanity? We demand that Vanderbilt reinstate the referendum, that they drop all charges against students that were filed under false pretenses, that they drop the suspensions and harassment from administration, and that they issue an immediate apology to what we experienced over the last 24 hours.
And there you have his wrap-up the next morning of the previous 24 hours. I don't know where he went to jail or the conditions he was in. He seemed to like being in jail. He had a lot more things than he had at Vanderbilt for, you know, $60,000 a year. Anyway, I wasn't there, so I can't really comment. The only thing I tell these protesters is that you will have to do a lot more protesting. You will have a lot more encounters with a lot harsher treatment to come anywhere near the civil rights movement and the Vietnam War era during the 1960s. You may think that you're big and bad and bold and you are really, really just making a change in the world, and all you want to do is run to the microphone on social media. Look at me! I protested last night. I spent a little time in jail. Anyway,
Okay, what you are not hearing, what you are not hearing is that if she stands up to use the restroom to change her tampon, they are threatening arrest. So it is not an option for her.
And there you have it, folks. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, a little difference between the protesters of the 1960s and the protesters that we see today via social media. Now, don't get me wrong, I am not advocating that we go back to the 1960s with police and tear gas and billy clubs and horses and dogs and all that stuff. That was really over the top. But I am saying that if some of the people today had to face anything like we looked back then, they would have folded like a cheap suit. They would be running home to mom or calling on their cell phone to be picked up by mom and dad in the Tesla and taken to Chipotle or wherever. So different times, different places. I'm just saying that the people who changed the world back then, and don't get me wrong, the people in the 1960s changed the freaking world. It is a different place today because of what was done there with their blood, sweat, tears, and even some that lost their lives. I just look at some of these people today. No, I can't go there. I'm sorry. No. I'm not going to go there. Anyway, next week we're going to continue speaking about what was going on in the 1960s, a little bit of what was going on in Vietnam in front of the camera, behind the camera. By that I mean we have access to President Johnson's and President Nixon's speeches, and we also have access to their phone calls, which were made late at night to people that they didn't ever think would be seeing the light of day. And it's a fascinating look into the Vietnam War. A lot of stuff that was going on then that we had no idea. Anyway, that is more than a podcast. Thank you so much for the pleasure of your time. I do know your time is very valuable, and hopefully you picked up a gleam or two of something you found interesting today or knowledgeable or maybe even a little bit funny, the way the 60s were versus today. You had to be there to enjoy it. Of course, they say if you were remembering the 1960s, you probably weren't there. But anyway, we'll do another program on that later. I'm Barry Papernick. That's more than a podcast. Be with me next time when, again, we go back in time right here.